I actually remember I had the literal epiphany standing on a volcano with my friend Siggy, my Icelandic friend, watching the sunset at about 11:30 p.m. It was he Siggy has this tradition where, you know, he has a scotch and a cigar at the top of every mountain that he summits. And it was just like that moment where, like, what am I doing with my life? Why am I not doing more of this? Why are all my friends chained to their desks? And how can I pay forward this experience that I'm having onto other people?
We stand today.
This is Method.
The Business
with
Method.
A shadow.
The Business Method.
The Business Method Podcast.
The Business Method Podcast featuring Chris Reynolds. Entrepreneurs, systems, methods, tools, and tactics for location independence.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, I'm your host, Chris Reynolds, and welcome to the Business Method Podcast, a podcast featuring successful entrepreneurs and high-profile people dissecting their online and location-independent business models. We dissect the different methods, tools, and tactics of high-performance online entrepreneurs and high-caliber people in a series format. On our first series, we interviewed 100 entrepreneurs in 100 days that had built businesses creating $100,000 or more annually. On our second series, we are interviewing 100 entrepreneurs that have built location-independent businesses that generate $1 million or more in annual revenue. There's a growing movement of people building these caliber of businesses, and we are getting behind the minds, the logic, and the science of what it takes to build businesses like this. On top of that, we also gather entrepreneurs at events and retreats around the world. This October, we are having our annual event in Thailand, Get Shit Done Live. It's 10 days of high-performance productivity, targeted collaboration, and rapid execution designed for entrepreneurs to get a lot of work done in a little amount of time. Some say it's like 10 months of work in 10 days. There's a magic that happens when brilliant minds come together to push one another towards productive execution. That is exactly what this retreat is about. Check out all the details at thebusinessmethod.com. That is thebusinessmethod.com. Now, let's jump in today's show.
The Business Method.
So many travelers have the dream of creating travel experiences for others and making it a business. So many people try to build a business like this and so many people fail. I was one of them. It isn't the easiest business model and it really takes a very unique person to start, grow, and scale a travel business while being a long-term traveler themselves. Today, I'm happy to introduce you to that entrepreneur. Matt Wilson is the founder of Under 30 Experiences. Under 30 Experiences is a travel company taking people all over the world in between the ages of 21 and 35 to amazing destinations, running over 200 trips per year. They're also ranked Inc.'s fastest growing top 5,000 businesses. Matt was on the top of a mountain back in 2011 in Iceland when he got the idea to create this business. And over the past 7 years and spending months and months and months on the ground in exotic locations all over the world, he has scaled this business to over seven figures while living an incredible location independent life. We chat with Matt exactly on how he did it, how he continues to grow the company as organic as possible while creating and promoting sustainable tourism. It's an incredible episode, you guys, with a very inspiring entrepreneur. And without further ado, Matt Wilson.
Entrepreneurs, systems, methods, tools, and tactics.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back and we have Matt Wilson on the mic today. Matt, I had to say hello. How are you doing? And you're calling in from Austin, right?
I am. I sure am here in Austin, Texas. It's a beautiful day.
Very cool. Now, I know you hail from Costa Rica and I crossed paths with you at Freedom X Fest in Spain just recently, but we never properly met. And we were both speaking and I really wanted to get to know you, but I think I had a panel the same time that you were presenting, so I had to miss it. And then I didn't get to follow up with you afterwards, but I'm grateful and thank you for coming on the podcast so we can get to know each other a little bit more. But first off, how are you? How are you doing? And how is Austin?
Good. I'm good. I'm excited, of course, to be here at our headquarters, if you will, in Austin. But taking off, I think I told you earlier we were chatting, headed to Bali for a yoga retreat and then over to Thailand to visit our team there. And yeah, you say hail from Costa Rica. Originally, I'm from New York, of course, but I've spent I've been going down to Costa Rica since 2011 or 12, and yeah, I spend more and more time there each year. Pretty much live there full time at this point, so it's a pretty fun place.
Whereabouts in Costa Rica do you live?
Manuel Antonio. It's on the Pacific
side. No way,
dude.
I used to live there. I lived there for a year in 2011, 2012. Yeah.
Where did you live?
Oh, we lived on Old Capos Road. I don't know if you know it. The gravel road that goes up in between Capos and Manuel Antonio. And
where exactly on that road?
You know, the town's small enough. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I used to live on that. I lived on that road for 2 years. Our staff house is still on that road.
No way. Wow. Small road. Okay. So is the restaurant still on the road?
El Dorado.
Yeah, that's it. Okay, so if you go down towards Capos, downhill, and on the left-hand side, there's a little apartment complex, kind of like orangish, yellowish apartment complex.
Pez Vela, right before Villateca.
There's a pool behind it, right?
Pez Vela, it's called.
So we lived actually behind that. So our landlord is Fernando? Oh, I'm forgetting
Not
his name.
Not Don Victor. You know him? Mm-hmm.
No.
He's the guy. His family owned the farm there.
Okay. No, it wasn't him. But there was just a little two-bedroom house. It was kind of brown and yellowish and has, of course, a gate around it. And then an apartment behind it. Oh, man. I wish I knew my landlord's name right now. But it was 2012, so it's been it's a while, 6 years.
Yeah, that gate with the pool, and it's two bedrooms, top and bottom floor. There's two apartments right there.
Yes, correct. Yep.
Yeah. The guy who owns it is called Don Victor, and his family, he's got the two golden retrievers. Do you remember the dogs?
I remember some dogs, yeah.
Anyway, we're going down a real rabbit hole, but I have to ask you if you've hiked to Playa La Macha right there.
Down
hidden beach behind there.
Yeah, I went down there many times, man. We would go down there and, yeah, because it was right behind our house. I loved it. So we ran a little daycare. So there was a woman named Diane that ran a daycare, and she left to go back to the States. She married a Tico. She went back to the States. She was from Florida, and then we took over her daycare. And we ran it from like 8 to noon, and I was working online at the time, just left the U.S. And that's wild, man.
Small world. I mean, that's a little town, and we lived.
You can hit a
golf ball from my place to where I used to, or my place to your place. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I wonder. I'm sure we crossed paths. I should have looked on Facebook to see if we were friends. I'm sure we have mutual friends. Of course, Bon and his dad that run the Peace Hostel.
Peace Hostel. I think that. Actually, I don't think that exists anymore.
It may have went out of business, but they ran it where the old Tefl house was, out on that road that went out on the north side of town, the dirt road. Anyway, yeah. So listeners have no idea what we're talking about right now.
No, but it was too fun not to catch up.
Yeah, so wild. Okay, so. Yeah, welcome to the show, man, and it's good to know that Manuel Antonio is still kicking, and it's an amazing little beach surf town if anybody wants to head down that way, but not too many people, so Matt doesn't get flooded with too many travelers or too many tourists coming down that way. But
no, please. We do have 18 mutual friends on Facebook. I just looked it up.
Wow, how wild. Yeah,
funny.
Okay, let's talk more about that after the show.
Sure.
Yeah, I've got a load of questions for you. As you know, we're interviewing 100 seven-figure location independent entrepreneurs, and we're on the tail. I think you're going to be on the last five, so I think we've done around 93, 94, 95 or so. I love to get into the minds of people who are just starting out the businesses organically. They love travel. They love to create something that helps other people. So I'd like to just give you the mic for a couple of minutes and kind of get your backstory about how you started to travel and become location independent and start the business that you have now under 30 Experiences.
Sure. Yeah, I'd love to. Long story short, I was living in New York, working in Silicon Alley and working for startups and doing the hustle and the grind and worshiping Gary Vaynerchuk and all that kind of stuff. And that gets old quick. It just was a lot of long hours, 14 to 16 hours a day in front of the computer. And when I wasn't doing that, I was partying and... Just, living, doing what young people do in New York, I guess, but kind of got to be the point where it was the same conversations with the same people. I mean, startups are exciting, don't get me wrong, but personally, it wasn't fulfilling. It was going to the same bars and doing the same dumb stuff. And I needed a change. I got invited on a trip to Iceland, and I didn't even know where Iceland was at that point, but looked it up, saw videos, and I said, yeah, this place looks awesome. And I went, met this guy named Siggy, and he was a mountain guide there. In 2010, the BBC knocked on his door because they heard he was a mountain guide and could bring them to the top of Eyjafjallajökull, the volcano that erupted in 2010 and stopped all the air traffic.
Oh,
and
wow.
He just kind of looked at the people like, yeah, sure. I mean, I've been on the rescue team since I was 12. Of course I can bring you up the volcano. And then his wheels started turning and saying, wait, we have this amazing, amazing piece of nature in our backyard. You know, I'm Icelandic. And he started his tour business there. And I met him over there, and we started kicking around ideas. And we said, let's do a retreat together. I'll try to bring some Americans over, and you can help run the thing. We'll co-lead it. And it started like that because I found amazing connections in Iceland to give us access to places in their country and parts of the culture that you couldn't just see as a tourist. And so I started really traveling after that, packed up my stuff, you know, threw my mattress in the freight elevator of the 39th floor apartment that I was living in. And I told the doorman, I don't care, put it on the curb, whatever you want to do, I'm out of here. And, so I went to Costa Rica, met somebody who lived in Costa Rica, went down there, crossed over to Nicaragua, got invited to Indonesia, just started traveling like crazy, ended up going to France and living in Paris for a little while. Just you know, really did the digital nomad wanderlust type of life. But each place I would go, I would scout out new locations where I could bring people. And we started marketing Under 30 Experiences, a travel company for people ages 21 to 35. And it was all about community. It still is all about community, because I didn't have people in New York who wanted to travel, because everybody was worried about the, you know, the house and the ring and the car and the kids and the work, time off, blah, 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 which all of that are sometimes necessities of life. But I wanted to go explore and meet people whose values aligned a little bit more like my own. And through travel, it just opened me up. I mean, I'm a completely different person now, you know, instead of partying on the weekends, I spend my time working on my own health and wellness, and practicing yoga, meditating, reading books, really trying to make myself the best person that I can possibly be. And as that, you know, as I saw new places and opened up to new ideas and started to learn new languages and learn how to surf and all these things, I just changed and wanted to connect with other people who had ambitions to do the same. And so we've been bringing travelers through Under 30 Experiences to places all over the world now for the last 6 years. And it's been a pretty wild ride, and built an amazing business around it as well.
It's incredible, man. I think if we would have met in Costa Rica back in the day, this used to be my dream business model. Maybe I would have teamed up with you and or at least joined up in some fashion, maybe work for you guys. But I think it's a genius idea. I got to know a couple things. First off, before we dive into the business side of things, why do you choose Manuel Antonio in Costa Rica as your hub?
So I just felt at home there. I did a season in Tamarindo, to the north in Costa Rica, and that was right around 2012, so we might have not actually crossed paths, because, again, if you've ever been up to Tamarindo, it's all about surfing. It's still a kind of a party scene, and not kind of a party scene. I mean, there is a party scene there. It's more your maybe entry-level gateway to Costa Rica when you're at the right age and at that time of of your life. And then once I heard about Manuel Antonio and realized that there's a lot more lush nature, I mean, the jungle meets the ocean. So you have the best of both worlds where you can, you know, we have three different types of monkeys, two different types of sloths, and lush, what feels like rainforest there, where you can still surf and have these incredible beaches. And so, yeah, it's just an adventurer's paradise. And the culture is close enough to the United States where it feels, you know, I feel at home there. You know, when you just have the feeling that, like, oh, this is for me. That's what happened, and it hooked me.
It's such a short flight, too, right? 3 hours to Texas? Is that what it is?
Yes, 3 hours there, 5 hours up to New York. Want to see my grandmother in Miami. It's a couple hours, you know, 2.5 hours. So it really worked out nicely. And I don't meet many people like yourself down there. I mean, there are plenty of people who come through, but I've actually started to transition back here to Austin just so I can be on top of my business game and not just be in the jungle barefoot like I am most of the time.
That was the one thing that I missed too. Like, we spent 13 months there and I missed my like-minded entrepreneurial personal growth communities. And while there's some amazing people there and a lot of great people that come through there, after I left, I actually realized I started a business called the Entrepreneur House that brought entrepreneurs together in co-living experiences around the world. And I realized that was, you know, the big thing that I was missing. So it was kind of the big lesson for me to, when I left Manuel Antonio, I had this kind of hole in me. I'm like, why am I lonely? You know, I'm living in paradise. And then I found my people and I was like, ah, that's the reason. I just didn't have them down there. But yeah, it is an amazing place for sure. Do they still have the market on Friday and Saturday nights that sell the magical brownies?
Oh, the magical brownie. I haven't seen that dude in a while. That's really funny. But I know the guy you're talking about. Yeah, I guess that's how it goes down there.
Yeah. Anyway, cool. So you started this. Were you in Costa Rica when you came up with the idea for this business? Or
That was actually born in Iceland on top of a volcano. I actually remember I had the literal epiphany standing on a volcano with my friend Siggy, my Icelandic friend, watching the sunset at about 11:30 p.m. over that volcano that I just described. And it was Siggy has this tradition where, you know, he has a scotch and a cigar at the top of every mountain that he summits. And it was just like that moment where, like, what am I doing with my life? Why am I not doing more of this? Why are all my friends chained to their desks in New York? And how can I pay forward this experience that I'm having onto other people?
And the implementation, did you start implementing and growing a business? And you came back to New York and started to do some traveling, right? Were you growing the idea while you were traveling?
Yes, no, absolutely. So I had a business at that time, under30ceo.com, and we were a media site for entrepreneurs. It still exists. It's not ours anymore. We don't own it. It was acquired in 2016. But we're a media site for entrepreneurs, publish news, advice, interviews, articles to about 500,000 monthly readers at our peak. And so our first trip was a retreat specifically for entrepreneurs. And then everybody started asking, like, hey, do you have to be under 30? Do you have to be a CEO? What's the deal with your trips? They look awesome, because everyone saw the photos on social media. And it grew very organically. And we just said, no, come. If you're cool, we'll have a good time. And everybody started telling their friends about it after that.
Now, what I like about this model is that you do a lot of just organic meetups for the community of under 30 experiences. And I like that. We had Stefan Jacob, who's the CEO of Cotopaxi, and he just started kind of doing the same thing. He just started organic either races, 5K, 10K races, and going on promoting on college campuses. Now they've got an amazing business. We had another gentleman who is the founder of, oh, Ivy. And they also do, I don't know if you're familiar with them because they're more popular in New York, but they do meetups, and their whole business model is based on hundreds of meetups per year. And that's really cool because it's just such an organic thing that, that travelers are going to do anyway. They're going to go to meetups, and then it's kind of the end, right? So people kind of get warmed up to you guys, and then they book a trip later because of the meetups, correct?
Absolutely. We've actually spoken a number of times to Ivy about doing some biz dev together because they have a lot of meetups as we do. And those are people looking to meet other young people and looking to do something fun with their life. I mean, their target market are people who have good jobs or went to Ivy League schools. And yeah, that's obviously a really great market for us. And yeah, I mean, that's what it's all about. The idea originated for the meetups because we wanted to take what we did on the trips and take a little part of that back to where we came from. So whether it was, you know, sharing food and drinks with people, going on a hike, going kayaking, little outdoor excursion, meeting new people, these types of things. We've had outdoor workouts in New York. We've had yoga. We've had all sorts. I mean, we've had camping trips, ski trips in the United States as well, which are a little bit larger productions. But we're just trying to get good people together.
That's really cool, man. And why'd you, I know you were running the under 30 CEO. Is that, did that just carry over? Or any other reason why you decided to pick this niche?
No, I mean, under 30 CEO, we chose that name when we were 22 postgraduates and 22 years old. This is Jared O'Toole and I, me and Jared O'Toole are my co-founder and, yeah, we chose that name when we were 22 and never thought we'd see 30. But here I am at 32. The name's still here. And, well, it's just a hell of a hell of an honor that the thing stuck around so long. So that's amazing. And now we're, you know, as you said, we're seven figures and location independent. Pretty cool.
When you're 40, are you still going to go on your own trips? And people, do you think that people will be okay with that?
I mean, I might be the creepy old guy, but yeah, I think
they're like, "Who's the old guy on the trip? Yeah, what's he doing here?"
Exactly. Now and for people listening, if they want to get involved with our community, as long as they're young at heart and understand, yeah, you're going to have to keep up with young people. As long as you're not, I don't know, again, creepily old, and if you're there for the right reasons, it's obvious very quickly.
Yeah, very cool. Growing a business is. Was there a lot of hustle in the early days for you guys, or is it something that you guys just took more organically and grew it one trip by another trip by another trip? How'd that look?
Well, I think both. There was a lot of hustle to get it to grow one trip by the next trip to the next trip. And we had to recruit people and invite people at first. And, you know, just finding our first couple travelers was extremely difficult because everyone's like, wait, a bunch of bloggers want to take us on a trip to Iceland? This doesn't make any sense. Why should I trust them? And yeah, who the heck do these guys think they are? And so a friend of mine named Ray Land, an entrepreneur himself, called me up and he said, yeah, I'm in. And I said, well, thank God, because, you know, I hope you know it's just you and I right now. So I'm down for a guy's trip. And he said, no, we'll salvage this. And he's a funny guy, if anybody knows Ray. And he's got a big Southern accent. He said, oh, yeah, we'll dial in a couple of our buddies. And he literally got in and started conferencing other people in and just cold calling some people who he thought would be fun for the group. And nice. He landed, he's a good salesman. He landed a couple people. So the first trip was really a runaway success, which, pretty amazing.
You know, you got a good entrepreneur friend when he'll call his buddies up and enroll them into your new business. And so you can go travel together. That's amazing.
Yeah.
How many trips did you go on until you stopped going on them?
Oh God. Well, I've never completely stopped going on them, which is important, especially as the CEO of the company. I mean, I go on a trip next week. Now I can't you know, now I can't go on 10 a year because that's a lot of time out of the office, but which is, of course, ironic in itself, but I probably went on the first, at least the first 50 trips. I mean, I was the original trip leader. It didn't matter what country we were going to. I was there with my local connections, meeting the people at the airport, doing every facet of the business, which now, you know, I get to manage teams manage teams of people who do this for us. We're almost 30 employees. And it's, again, pretty neat.
What I wanted to get to is the process of you going, letting the first trip go without you actually going on it. Does that make sense?
Sure. So building trust, I think, was the most important thing. And we had our very first trip leader other than myself. His name was Caesar. He came on a trip to Nicaragua. He was living in Miami at the time, but he was originally from Nicaragua. And he came down and he just became our cultural liaison and our ambassador to his country. And he was a traveler. And he pulled me aside after and he was like, "Hey, man, your Spanish isn't any good. You can't salsa dance. And there's probably three more ways I could be better than you at this. What do you think I help you out for free?" And we said, "Well, yeah, I mean, that sounds amazing." And so Caesar still works for Under 30 Experiences today. He became our first trip leader. He didn't get paid at first, like I said, that he worked doing sales, community management stuff. He became our Central American manager. Now he's our chief of staff for the entire company. And so I just trusted him eventually when I was going on a trip a week at one point. And, can't do more than a couple of months. And so, I mean, they're brutal. You're on your feet at 7 a.m. with the group, and you don't go to sleep until well after midnight. They're all on vacation, but as a trip leader, you're not.
Yes.
and in the early days, we had less rules and a lot more fun. Not that trip leading isn't fun now, but now it's turned into a profession for a lot of people. But you have to respect your own limits and your own health and know when to call it a night. And that became, and so I'd be doing that and building the company. It's not just enough to keep the people happy. You want to grow the business and do all the back end stuff. So eventually I just said, "All right, Caesar, you got to take this one because I'm exhausted." And man, we went to a lot of places. And then I'll tell you, I became the kind of the scout. So I'd go places, scout it out, and then I'd put together the itineraries, make all the local connections, taste the food, sleep in the beds at the restaurants, etc. And then I'd run the first one and train somebody and hand it off. And so I did that up till, last year, 2 years ago, because that's one of the biggest perks of the job of being the business owner. And now I've even transitioned a little bit further away where I just joined for the yoga retreats, and my girlfriend is the yoga teacher, and she does two a year right now, one in Costa Rica and one out in Bali. And so that's a pretty cool experience for us to be able to share in. And still keeps me in touch with our travelers. I get to go under the hood, as I call it.
I could totally relate, man. When I was doing, I would do like one or two months, and even in one time, 3 month co-living. And I was the guide for that time. And it was exhausting, taking care of people during that whole month. But then I was also building the business and going to find new research for new locations and making the contacts. And it was a hustle, man. So much respect to you, because I think that's to build a business off that. That's a lot of work and a lot of emotional investment to do that. So kudos, man. And also what an incredible testimonial to your first guide who volunteered for the job first and then is now a major part of your business. Like, that's anybody, any listener out there that is thinking about joining a business or wants to join a business, volunteer first. Nobody's going to say, very few entrepreneurs are going to say, no, I don't want you to work for me for free for the first month or two, you know, or the first trip or whatever it is. And then you get an easy in, and then you may have an opportunity open up to where that person can work for the company. So have you had anybody else do that with you guys, or was it just the I'm sorry, I forgot his name, the first guy from
Nicaragua? Caesar.
Caesar, yeah.
You know, we've had, we have another guy named Eric, and he started hustling. He was working on Wall Street. He was about a year out of school, had a big fancy job, realized it wasn't for him, came on one of our trips, and he said, all right, what can I do? How can I hustle? And yeah, so he started hustling for us, just doing business development. And to be honest, nothing ever came. He never got any results from this biz dev that he used to do for us. I can't even remember what it was, but he just stayed diligent. He just stayed persistent. And now he has what people would probably call the best job in the company. He's the head of product. And so this year he's been to the Galapagos, he's been to New Zealand, he's going to a conference in Brazil, he scouted out our trip to Japan. Like, the kid's doing well for himself. And so he took over what I used to do, scouting out trips. And so yeah, he's a true digital nomad in every sense of the word. But yeah, he hustled his way on from being a traveler. And it's easier to do that when it's a small company. Mm-hmm. Now that we are a player in the travel industry, then now we have more contacts with other companies, and we can recruit people at conferences, and we have industry contacts. But when you're first starting out and you don't know anybody, you know, you're rowing the boat. It's like whoever jumps on the boat, get them on board. But once you kind of turn into more of a ship, if you will, then you need to be more selective about, all right, we have certain qualifications, certain things that we look for in candidates, especially past experience. You know, you can't just send if somebody doesn't have first aid and CPR, you can't just send them out as a trip leader. So lots right. to think about.
Yeah, that's really good. That's the next thing I want to talk about, is logistics for a business like this. I think a lot of people, when they think about, especially service businesses, a lot of people stick to products just because they don't want to get into the logistics of service and working with humans as clients. and I'm curious, you know, you go out and you do a lot of the, you used to go, at least go do a lot of the ground research, and now you have people do that. In the early days, I guess, in even a couple of years ago when you're still doing it, how was managing the logistics for you?
For me personally, it was a nightmare. No, it wasn't a nightmare. It was something that I wasn't particularly fond of, because details aren't my thing. Okay, if you're on a trip, I'm going to take really good care of you. Yeah. But that doesn't mean once we have 50 trips, once we have 150 trips, that I'm going to be able to make 150 different bookings at all the different hotels, coordinate all the transportation. You know, now we're like 250 trips a year or something. So we have 4 or 5 regional managers across Asia, South America, Central America, Europe, and they have that job, but they were handpicked and came from experience at other travel companies. And so for me, organizing all of that and starting all our systems and our processes from scratch, as someone who never worked in the industry before, it was really tough. And it was just a lot to keep myself wrapped, you know, my head wrapped around, because there's just a lot of details and it was not my strength. Yet we didn't know anybody who was better at it, and I had been to all these places. So yeah, I know the name of the hotel here, I know the name of the transportation company over here, I can write all the itineraries. But just keeping up with that workload and the level of detail, because you can't screw anything up, or you need to be able to come up, you need to have people on the ground who can fix it for you. And that's what the regional managers bring now. But if I screwed up, you know what, I'd have to fly there and fix it myself. So, you know, like, for example, there's a big strike going on in Costa Rica. Well, I know our regional manager has it covered because she has a wealth of contacts. You know, if the road gets blocked here, she can call somebody who she knows that lives on that road to attend to the group, et cetera.
So how many trips did you say you're doing a year now?
Probably close to 250.
Wow. How big is the team now?
Close to 30 people altogether. Is maybe a little more than that.
Is everybody remote?
No. So we actually, we have our office here. It's a co-working space. There's about 10 of us in Austin. We have up to, you know, it's seasonal in Costa Rica, but we have one manager and about 6 to 7 trip leaders in Costa Rica. Thailand, we have somebody full-time and then a few staff over there. Europe, we have a office man, or we have a regional manager, someone to help out in the office in addition to the staff over there. So we actually much prefer to work hands-on, but or in the same place, but because of the nature of the business, yeah, of course, we're going to do a lot of work remotely, digitally.
And how much time are you spending actually at the quote-unquote office in Austin compared to being, you know, away traveling?
That's a good question. I mentioned that I'm transitioning more here to Austin because at first a lot of our team lived down there in Manuel Antonio in Costa Rica. Our marketing guy, our community manager, Caesar, the chief of staff. So it was a lot more convenient for us for excuse me, for me to live in Costa Rica because people around, my team was around. But now it just to feed off of the energy of them, to have clear communication in the same room. I know your listeners are probably all digital nomads, but I really like in-person communication, yet flexibility where you can go and take off. Like our marketing guy was like, hey, man, I'm going to Colorado for a week. And he had just gone through a long stretch of work and he earned it. So, okay, yeah, go ahead. I mean, I just spent 3 weeks in Europe, came back to Austin, went to visit my family in New York for a long weekend, came back here for a couple weeks. I'm going to Asia for 3 weeks. Then I'll be back here for 6 weeks. Then I'll probably be in Costa Rica. So, you know, I don't sit around, I would say.
Very cool. What part of Asia? You said you were going to Bali, right?
Yeah, so going to Bali for our yoga retreat, and then I'm headed over to Thailand to meet with our team, preview some of the trip, because it's been a while since I've been over there.
I'll be in Chiang Mai here in a couple of weeks, so if you're around Chiang
Mai,
we should have a coffee on me.
Yeah, all right. Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, let's do it. I'll be there in October anyhow.
Yeah, I'll be there for sure. We usually spend October, November down in Chiang Mai, and we do the DCBKK conference and then go up, and we actually have an event that we run afterwards. So it's a lot of – October's a great time for Thailand, right? Like it's – especially Chiang Mai, good weather, things are calming down. I think it's – and it's a beautiful city anyway.
Yeah, I can't wait to go. You have to send me the info on what's going on over there.
Yeah, for sure. So what I do want to ask you more about the meetups and the marketing that you guys do. I'm curious, like, how many people do you get to come to your events through the organic meetups that you guys have host?
So a lot of the people come because they heard about us online and saw that this is an opportunity to validate that we are a real company, that the people aren't weird, that, yeah, they just feel more comfortable before booking a trip to God knows where, right? Like, yeah, anywhere in the world that we go, kind of 15, 20 different countries at this point, they'd rather take a risk and go out for a happy hour and just meet somebody. And everybody, the best part is everybody was there, like, is saying, oh yeah, I went to Machu Picchu with these guys. Oh yeah, I just got back from Ireland, and people are all stoked on it. So it's really good marketing in that way, because it spreads organically. And then some people bring some friends. And then we have, you know, our alumni, as we call them. They are community managers, and so they will tell their, you know, they'll like post in the new to the city groups on Facebook, like new to Austin. That's a big one that our community manager from Austin will post in and tell people. And so we'll get people who show up, don't have any friends, and now they do. They don't have to come on a trip if they don't want to, but just come and have fun. And yeah, no pressure. It's totally an organic thing.
So it's basically the alumni that are hosting the events in the different cities?
Yes. Yeah. So about through probably 30 different cities across the U.S. and Canada. But then we will send some of our staff to the bigger ones. So we have two trip leaders who've been all over the world this year leading trips. And it's, you know, not a lot of people travel in September, October. It's a little bit slower. They needed a break. So they came here to the office and they planned out a East Coast and West Coast meetup tour. And so they will go and meet up, you know, do these meetups across the East and West Coasts and meet the travelers that they used to, that, you know, that they just saw in who knows where across the world. And so they're hosting little mini reunions. So we try to send our staff to some of the bigger events if we can to support and show gratitude and have a good time.
I like that. Could you guess roughly on and the amount of people that go on your trips, how many actually attend a meetup before they come on a trip? Do you have any idea on that number or the percentage?
Before, it's not too high, I would say. Mm-hmm. 10% or so. It's not that high. You know, we've had a couple thousand travelers this year already. And so, yeah, I don't think tons of them had come before a trip, but we also incentivize people to come to meetups and we give them $100 discount codes. So they then once they're part of the club, then they say, and we don't say the club, but just a figure of speech. Yeah, once they're part of the Cool Kids Club, then they come out, get a discount, meet some people. It's a win-win all around.
That's cool, man. What's the future of Under 30 Experiences look like for you guys?
So we just want to scale at an organic pace where we can stay boutique and do something very meaningful for people, because we think that we're doing a really good thing in this world, both giving to our travelers. Because people need to go out and see the world. I really strongly believe in this for all the reasons that I said at the beginning of the show. I mean, travel has had such profound impact on me that I want to pay that forward to other people, and our whole team feels the same. But also in the local communities where we operate overseas, especially in the developing world, we're able to keep the money in the local economies and spend our money the right way, support causes that are very positive and have cultural exchanges and work with local community organizations. And so we want to keep scaling that. That has the power to change the world, we really believe. And so we just want to do it the right way. We want our community to still feel tight-knit as we grow. So yeah, scale is important to us. And we just hit the Inc. 5000 list. We were number 801, eight hundredth basically fastest growing company in America, like number 8 in travel, all of travel and tourism, which is crazy. But we don't want to just we want to make sure we do it the right way again.
I want to ask you one more question, Matt. Like from a, I guess, travel industry business and from a nomad like yourself, what would you say is the difference in your industry between a 5-figure mentality, a 6-figure mentality, and a 7-figure mentality?
That's a good question. 5-figure, 6-figure, 7-figure. So 5 figures... I mean, I remember that mentality. It was, hey, let's get it up there and let's put something online. And I see a lot of these businesses popping up. People at Freedom X Fest told me, yeah, I run some retreats for entrepreneurs. I run some, you know, there were yoga teachers there. I run just these boutique little things. And I kept thinking back to the days where, yeah, I remember doing that. And I remember losing a lot of money on some of those first trips. So making sure that your budgets are in order is important. And by the way, we do this with what we call custom experiences. So if people want to run a trip, but they don't have the insurance, they don't have the local guides, they don't speak the local language, they don't have any connections in these places, we can put a trip on for them and just run it under their name. That's something that we do kind of on the side. We call it custom experiences. Yeah. But then six figure, you start to grow and you're like, oh man, I have a real business here. This needs to start getting serious. There needs to be processes, standard operating procedures. How is this thing bigger than me? Can I afford to bring on a couple more people as a six-figure business? And still, can we all possibly make livings off of this? You're still kind of in that unknown. And then seven figures, then you're starting to look like, all right, I can just, so between 2 and 5 million, they usually call that the black hole or the Oregon Trail, where you can read a lot of different books on how that's the one of the toughest places to get your business passed, because that's where, you know, when you're growing, you got to pay to grow. Growth sucks cash. Yeah. And you're paying, you're trying to pay people what they're worth, but you can't afford to do so yet. And you need a special type of person to operate in that kind of environment. And so, I'm just looking forward to eight figures as we start to head in that direction, because then, you know, we're finally getting to the point where we can pay people industry standards, and it feels like a real company. People have more job security. Cash flow crunches aren't so crazy. We have a little more experience under our belt working with a part-time CFO. These types of things, that's when we're, edging into a little bonus for everybody looking to get into eight figures. So, I'm excited about that, because that's within reach.
Very cool, my friend. Well, congratulations on all your success. Well deserved, because I know you hustled a lot to get all these trips planned out and traveled a lot. I imagine that was pretty taxing, but also very inspiring and amazing journey to go on. So I just want to say thank you so much for sharing all your tips and tricks and wisdom with us. We really appreciate it. And if the listeners want to reach out and learn more about Under 30 Experiences, or anything about you or your podcast, I forgot to mention, where's the best place they could go?
Cool. Hey, I appreciate that, Chris. I would say personally, if you want to reach out, you can just email me, matt@under30experiences.com. I usually get back to my email once a week. So that's, look forward to connecting with people there. But personally, you can also send me an Instagram message. That's more fun than email, mattwilsontv. Mm-hmm. And then under30experiences.com. You can check out all our trips there. We go all over the place, cool international adventures. And on our blog on Under 30 Experiences, you can find the Live Different podcast. I've recorded probably close to 120 different episodes with everybody from Kareem Abdul-Jabbar to the former president of Starbucks, and some cool people. So, looking forward to connecting with everybody.
Yeah, right on. Again, Matt, thank you so much. We really appreciate it. And listeners, thank you guys for joining us once again. And we'll see you all on the next episode. Goodbye, everybody. Hey, listeners, thanks for joining us once again. We wanted to remind you about our high performance productivity coaching and our annual Get Shit Done live retreat in Thailand. Both are designed for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs to get a lot of work done rapidly. And whether you need some personal coaching while working away at home, or a retreat in Thailand where you can get out of your normal routine and surround yourself with other successful entrepreneurs, we have those options for you. Check out all the details at thebusinessmethod.com, and we'll see you on the next podcast.